Good evening and welcome to another Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, here from 9 till 10 tonight, filling you in on the latest news and rumours on all the latest transfers. In a week that's seen Di Maria's transfer drag its feet, Max Gradle coming back to the Premier League, and the Benzema rumours rearing their heads once again, we will go through them all with a fine-tooth comb. Joining me as always is Mirror Online's Liam Williams, along with a whole host of journalists from across the country to discuss all of the latest news.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, here from 9 till 10 tonight, talking about all the latest transfer rumours on the back pages and the Twitter sphere. And to help me find out what's rumour and what's news is Mirror Online's Liam Williams. Liam, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be back, Danny. How are you?
Oh, I'm all good, mate. How have you been keeping well?
Yes, very well, very well.
Ah, good stuff. Obviously, it's been a lot happening over the last week. It is getting to what some may well call silly season now. And the biggest news is what is now developing into a saga, and it has to be Angel Di Maria. Let's have hear a little bit of a clip about him, about how happy he is to join Paris Saint-Germain, even though there's no definite confirmation yet from either club.
I'm grateful that a team like Paris Saint-Germain have put their faith in me and would like to sign me. I'm going to try and bring the best of my abilities and also to do the best for this team. I'm so happy to join this club. What I know about PSG is that it's a team that won all the possible trophies in France last season. We're going to try and go as far as possible in the Champions League, and that was so important for the club. But I also know that I want to help the club overcome the obstacle that is the quarter-finals of the Champions League.
Interesting stuff. Liam, what have you made of this transfer saga?
Well, it's a bit like you just said, actually. It's a weird one that you don't even know if it's finished or not, because it just goes on so long and you just kind of assume, you know he's going to Paris Saint-Germain, you know that's going to happen, but it's not actually being... You do wonder sometimes, think, has he actually moved? Are we still waiting? I am glad that it's sort of coming to an end and it's just all going to be dealt with sooner rather than later. But I think the way that him and his party have handled it has been nothing short of disgraceful, to be honest. Fair enough, if he wants to move to Paris, that's on him. You know, he's been unsettled in Manchester for a while, and I'm not going to hold that against him, but to refuse to join up with your squad for pre-season when they're paying him an exorbitant amount of money, I think it's one of the worst things you can do as a professional footballer. At least Raheem Sterling, when Liverpool were going back to pre-season training, he didn't turn up for the first day. But at least he gave an excuse. He said he was unwell, and maybe he was. I mean, the chances are it was just an excuse, but at least he had the decency to give an excuse. Di Maria just went AWOL. Didn't tell anyone where he was, went into hiding, and then went over to speak to Paris when he didn't have permission from his club, which I think was absolutely ridiculous.
But surely this is a case now of it was always going to be on the cards. You know, Angel Di Maria obviously had in his head that he was going to go. Manchester United had obviously given up on him because in the second half of the season he was played in six different positions and wasn't given, his best way of playing. And that's a stark change to the start of the season from that fantastic chip he had against Leicester and being, at some points, the leader in assists.
Yeah, and I've no problem with a player who wants to leave a club, but it's how you handle the situation. You know, David De Gea wants to leave Manchester United, but he's still turned up to training, and he might even end up seeing out his contract. I just think it's how you handle it, because if David De Gea does go, he'll probably leave with a lot of Manchester United fans' blessing, but Di Maria will never, ever be thought of the same for United fans.
But I mean, he was already, to a large part of the Premier League now, he will be put down as one of the biggest flops and most expensive flops that there has been, and that's going to have a big mark on Manchester United to sell him for a lot less than what they paid for him last year. That was a big record transfer fee.
Yeah, it will, but what you've got to remember is they are recouping quite a lot of that money. You know, I mean, I think it were about 44 million, but because of the way that he's actually handled it, Manchester United are saying we want another £3 million. They say that you've broken rules of, you know, leaving before we said you could go. We want another £3 million. So actually, they're only going to lose about £12 million on a £60 million transfer.
Oh, so pocket change.
Well, it's 20%, isn't it? If you're looking at a percentage, if you look at Liverpool when they sold Andy Carroll to West Ham, they lost over half of what they paid for him. That for me is sort of a bigger loss. You know, it's about how much of your original fee you can recoup. And if they were to sign Pedro with that money, which they will, and still have another 20 million left over. I think it's okay business, really.
I mean, Paris have obviously been the big winners out of this. They were interested last season. There's no doubt about that. They were in the market for him. It was probably financial fair play rules that actually stopped him from going there in the first place. Mm. So they come out as the best winners out of this more than anyone.
I think they probably do, actually. They wanted him last season, but couldn't quite get the money together to pay for him, so ultimately ended up going to the only team who could afford him. Mm. He has a terrible season at Old Trafford, goes then for a cut fee for less money than they'd have paid originally, so they have actually done quite well out of it.
Yeah, not bad at all. We'll be talking more about Angel Di Maria very shortly. Andrew Gibney, French football correspondent for Bleacher Report, French Football Weekly, amongst a whole other host of establishments, will be joining me. I'm sure it'll be another great, insightful interview into the French Football League. So we'll be talking a little bit on Max Gradle, former Leeds United player, moving from St Etienne to Bournemouth, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic's comments on his next move being a big surprise. And to be fair, Liam, I mean, he's probably just feeding the media here, but any striker now that's saying their next move is going to be a big surprise and probably to a different league, it's going to be rumoured to be the Premier League, because none of the major players, apart from Liverpool, have any depth in the forwards.
No, I think Manchester United said that they were happy with the striking options. Manchester City have sold Dzeko, or he's on the verge of going, so that leaves them really down to just Aguero. Chelsea, they are sorted up front. Mm. You know, they won't be looking for another striker. They've got three, but you do feel they look a bit toothless when Costa's injured, as you saw on Sunday in the Community Shield. I just think it's Ibrahimovic on one of his little sort of wind-ups, and I wouldn't read too much into it, to be honest.
You got to love him for it, though, haven't you?
I don't know, it's a bit tiresome, I think, you know, it's like, it kind of loses its effect when you're doing it so regular. Like when he were having a go at the league that he was in, I can't repeat on the radio the words that he actually said, but it just makes headlines, doesn't it, with anything that he says, and eventually I just get a bit bored of it, to be honest.
Well, I thought it was going to bring me and everyone else some joy, but there we go. let's move on to Chelsea. We're just talking about their attacking options. Obviously, they've had... Well, I'm sure we'll be talking more about Zlatan in the coming months, Liam. Let's talk a little bit about John Terry and Chelsea as a whole after that Community Shield loss to Arsenal, and the first loss that Jose Mourinho suffered to Arsene Wenger. Not that you would have known that by reading any paper over the last 3 or 4 days, yep. But let's hear John Terry talking about that defeat and going forward.
You know, we had kind of Monday off and we're back in today, and as you say, we play again Wednesday. I just think sometimes, you know, you win. Sometimes it's, you know, it's not nice losing. Of course, you want to win everything. And going into the game, we wanted to win the Community Shield for sure. But coming away, you have to take the positives from it. I think the only positive you can take from it is I thought we played well, we looked sharp. But more importantly, the disappointment within the squad of losing the game. It didn't happen much last year. And sometimes it can give you that little wake-up call just before the season starts. So it could be a blessing in disguise. Let's certainly hope so.
John Terry there talking to Sky Sports News about that Community Shield loss at Wembley. Is this a wake-up call for Chelsea and actually to a lot of the media that have had them pinned as title holders for next season?
I don't think it is, because most teams who win the Community Shield tend not to go on to win the Premier League for whatever reason. So I don't think that it's a bit of a poison chalice. I don't think losing it's the biggest of Chelsea's concerns. However, on the flip side, I think that it's a big mental thing for Arsenal and Arsene Wenger. Because whenever they play Chelsea, or whenever they play against Jose Mourinho, you sort of knew what the result... Well, you knew what the result wasn't going to be. You knew Arsenal just weren't going to win the game. Now they know they can, even if it is only the Community Shield. I think it's a good mental barrier for them to have got over.
Yeah, let's have a look at Chelsea at the moment, because I've been talking to a few people about this, and obviously the biggest rumour is Stones to Chelsea, obviously. A lot of rumours about going to Manchester United and retired players getting involved as well. And we'll go into that in a second. But looking at Chelsea, to complete that defence, they really need a player like Stones to come in, don't they?
I think, personally, I thought they were OK with the three centre-backs that they had. But obviously Jose Mourinho wanted a fourth, whether he doesn't quite trust Kurt Zouma to step in when needed, or if he just wants... To be honest, when I have seen John Stones, he looks like an established centre-back. He looks like somebody who could, if Gary Cahill or John Terry got injured, he looks like he could just come in and play every game for Chelsea. I think it would be an excellent signing for them, but the way that they're going about it seems to be rubbing Everton up the wrong way, which would play well into Manchester United's hands, possibly Man City if they were interested as well. Because, I mean, just the way that they're going about it, being very, very public about it and almost disrespectful in a way, and I'd be a little bit reluctant, reluctant if I was Everton, to sell him to Chelsea.
But at the same rate, I mean, I know you said that they'd be happy with those three centre-backs. My biggest concern would be now, and this is something I've put to everyone, is John Terry going to replicate what he did last season? The man's 35 years old. You know, at some point, he's going to lose that yard of pace. And if it's next season, you're left with two centre-backs. And that, if you're going to be challenging the Champions League, if you're going to want that squad depth, you're going to need someone to really come in as backup.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't think that Chelsea think that they're okay with the three centre-backs. That's why they're pursuing Stones. I just thought myself that they'd be happy with it, but presumably not. You are right with what you say about Terry's age, but he says he still feels like he's got another year or two in him. He's never been fast, you know. He's always sort of had just some sort of... it's like a defensive rock, you know. A bit like Nemanja Vidic was at United, you know. Someone who was just so solid. Because his positioning, I thought, throughout his career at times has been faulty. Like, when you've seen the brilliant last-ditch tackles, they've come because he was out of position in the first place. I'm not sure that pace is a massive issue for him. If he can use his head more and use his experience more, there's no reason why he can't play another couple of years. But, like you say, if he does get an injury for a month, 2 months, or even longer, it would, I think, unless they got Stones, would leave them short at the back.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Chelsea do moving forward. Where do you now expect some of the big hitters to really... Or where do you expect John Stones to be by the end of this transfer window? Because a few people have bandied around some ideas that maybe he'll move to Chelsea and be loaned back to Everton, or if he went to a big club, he'd do that. But, I think he's good enough to be at least on any of the big four's bench and being able to come on for some of the big games. But which club do you expect him to be at?
Everton. I don't think he's moving, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I think Everton will say, if you're that desperate, we will let him go next season, but you've not given us enough time to get a replacement in. You know, they'll probably get some kind of gentleman's agreement in place and sort of see how the season progresses. But if they were to lose Stones now, they've already lost Distan. They've lost Alcaraz as well. They're not a defensively strong side, Everton, you know, particularly under Roberto Martinez. They would need time to get another established centre-back in. Jagielka's knocking on as well himself. Yeah. So losing Stones would be a big blow for Everton at this time in the transfer window, which is why I would be surprised to see him go almost regardless of the fee, to be honest.
It sounds interesting because I can't see him going anywhere else apart from Chelsea. I just think that he just seemed to slot in, and Mourinho said that he only needed that one last defender. I can totally understand your points. That's what I mean. He's just one of those where if Mourinho got that one last defender, he's saying he's fine. That's the speculation and personal opinion, but he just seemed to slot right in there, really.
He would, yeah, but you'd have to, like I say, you'd have to fork out a massive amount. They've said it's going to have to be, I think, a British record for a defender. I think Rio Ferdinand went for about 27 million.
Yeah.
And then Mangala last season was 42 million. So you're looking for a massive fee either way, which is, again, why I'd be surprised if he were to go. I'm surprised Manchester United haven't looked more at him, because they've said for a while now, you know, we're quite happy with our defensive options, which for me is a bit of a bluff to say we aren't absolutely desperate for a defender. But I just think Stones, if he were to go to United, he would slot in perfectly. He'd be a first team regular. He could fit in probably alongside Chris Smalling or maybe Max Rocco or maybe even Blind, you know, or Jones, whoever. But I think at the moment, that's where they probably look weakest. I looked at their predicted lineup for the Tottenham game on Saturday, and I thought, you can see the holes already. They don't look strong enough defensively. They don't look strong enough going forward. They've got a solid midfield now, which they've lacked for a long time, but I think they're lacking in two key areas. And if De Gea goes as well, you make that three areas.
I mean, this is something I wanted to bring up with you, actually. Just have a look at some of the top four teams going in to the first game of the season. Manchester United, like we said there, they do have big problems. And if they did lose De Gea before the end of the transfer window, that would cause some even more massive problems. And you look up front, if Rooney gets injured, they could be starting with Wilson and Januzaj.
Maybe Depay up front.
Well, I wouldn't say he was a natural goal scorer. I mean, he'll chip in, but, you know.
Well, I mean, apart from Wilson and Hernandez, none of them are natural centre-forwards. And you would rely then on sort of goals coming from a little bit deeper, you know, from the likes of Ashley Young and Mata. And there are goals there.
Yeah,
Mata's got a very good goal scoring record, and I think Depay will get a lot of goals next season. I'd be quite surprised if Manchester United didn't add another forward type player, and probably a defender as well. I think they need two. I think they're okay for now to go into the Tottenham game. I think they can look at that and say fair enough. And the games afterwards, Aston Villa away, I think, not sure where they go from there. But it's after the transfer window when the big games start coming in, when the Champions League comes back in. You know, there's a lot of games to add there. I do think that squad looks... I think it's fine for the top four, but if they want to challenge for the title, which that's all the noises in the off-season has been, this time we're going for the title, at the moment, they're miles off.
Yeah, it's surprising that, because personally, you know, outside looking in, Manchester United challenging for the title just seems a bit of a non-starter so far. You know, I mean, let's look at another team, Arsenal, for example, who I think a lot more people are tipping to challenge for the title. You know, there's a lot of talk there of people saying that they'll at least push Chelsea to a good end, whether or not Arsenal do the same thing as they do every year and get to January and then start to collapse. But let's just say that, you know, it breaks that curse. Arsenal still do have a few problems with their own squads, don't they? I mean, there's still the need to add some big firepower up front, and Benzema would be the best player to do that, surely.
I totally agree. I think if Arsenal signed Karim Benzema, they should have a look at the title next season. Yeah. They should really push Chelsea. But at the moment, Olivier Giroud did struggle a little bit with injuries last season. Danny Welbeck did play out wide a bit, and I think he had a few injuries himself.
He's not a natural person up front, is he?
Most of the goals came from Alexis Sanchez. He's going to miss, I think, the first three games of the season because of Copa America. They went all the way to the final, Chile, so he's had an extended break. And then you look a little bit deeper, Ozil and Ramsey and Cazorla. There are goals there, but there's not somebody you can see them firing. I think Sanchez is probably the main goal threat and doesn't play up front. You know, I think it's something Arsenal, I think, have lacked for quite a while now. Since Van Persie went, they've lacked somebody who can get them 20 goals, who you know will get 20 goals in a season. Wayne Rooney, if he plays up front, would get 20 goals. Diego Costa will. Sergio Aguero will. Luis Suarez would when he was here. He knew he'd get them. Arsenal haven't had that since Van Persie, and that's one of the main reasons they will not... In fact, they won't even be in a title race this season unless they sign someone like Benzema.
It's a big claim, but I'll give you that. Anyway, I'm looking at Man City's season. They look like they're going for the mentality of, we're going to try and outscore you because they've put everything into the forwards.
Yeah.
But then again, if their main man Aguero go, you can always put Bonnie in. Well, it's interesting, Liam. I mean, there's been that much transfer news this week. Not mentioned Paul Pogba. I've not mentioned Dzeko leaving to go to Italy. And I haven't mentioned the fact, and this is something I'm going to just talk about a little bit later on, how has Charlie Austin not moved clubs yet? More about Angel Di Maria and talk to Andrew Gibney, 442's French correspondent.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle. Lock all the doors, Noel Gallagher there with another one of his fantastic tunes. He still manages to do it after all this time. We're going to be talking more Angel Di Maria, and Liam Williams from The Mirror Online still joins me. This has become quite a saga now with Di Maria. Can I class this as a saga? Can I use the saga klaxon?
You can use the saga klaxon.
Yes! Di Maria is now officially a saga, goes there with De Gea and Sterling and all the rest of them.
Fantastic.
Happy days. I'm just happy I've been able to use that, because there's quite a few that have just been too short and sharp, and I don't like that, Liam. We've already talked about this. We've gone quite in depth with it. There's going to be quite a lot of changes to the Paris squad, I imagine, now, and they'll be going for their fourth successive title. Does Di Maria, him going to Paris, does that... Not shock you, but does it put any fear into any of the English teams going to the Champions League next season?
I think it will a little bit. I think teams will now probably start taking them a little bit more seriously. I mean, they've looked like threatening for a while. You know, they played really well against Chelsea last season. They went down to 10 men at Stamford Bridge and won. And that was really impressive. But they're still, for me, behind the big three of Bayern Munich, Barcelona and Real Madrid. I think they're at least on a par with the English teams now, if not already above them. They won't win it. They'll still win the French League, but they're certainly making strides now towards Europe.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Well, let's bring in Andrew Gibney, French football correspondent for Bleacher Report, 442, Sports 360, and the creator of French Football Weekly. Andrew, thanks for joining us. Let's talk about, obviously, probably one of the biggest news of the transfer window so far. What have you made of this saga?
Obviously, they're looking forward to it being over, which it seems we're very close to, but yet it still hasn't reached. He flew to Doha to have a medical, and now he's flying back to Paris to sign the contract. If I thought there's a sort of a metaphor for modern football, I think this is it. It's an interesting move. It's one where, on paper, it sort of makes sense to PSG. They've been linked for the last year since he signed Manchester United, but it doesn't make a lot of sense when you look at how PSG played at the end of last season and how they actually played their best football, because they were playing sort of 4-3-1-2 with Pastore playing behind Cavani and Ibrahimovic. Now, where do you put Di Maria in that sort of formation? It then has to be a change back to 4-3-3, which wasn't, PSG didn't play their best football playing that. So it seems to me it's like a signing that Laurent Blanc has wanted to make for 12 months, and now he's kind of got the chance to do it. It's probably not exactly what they need. He's a fantastic player, and he will definitely sort of find success there, but whether he actually makes them a better team, I'm not entirely convinced.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It was last season that they had a lot of interest in Di Maria, obviously before he moved to Manchester United.
Yeah, apparently it was because of the financial fair play sort of regulations, they couldn't sort of get that deal done. I think it would have happened had the restrictions been lifted like they had been this year. And there's a small theory I have is that Laurent Blanc's been in a bit of a power battle with the people in charge of PSG as to who picks the team, who's in charge. And I just wonder if they've given him, with this move, just enough rope that he can possibly make his own noose, so to speak, that if they give him the player that he wants and it doesn't work and they don't get any further in the Champions League and they don't impress on the field, do they then have the power to say, look, you got your way and it didn't work and we can now get rid of you? Because before, he sort of proved the doubters wrong by beating Chelsea in the Champions League, winning their third consecutive title. I mean, there's really no doubt they're going to more likely win their fourth. But it's the Champions League where they really want to progress.
I mean, obviously, Di Maria's not had the greatest at times at Manchester United. The stats would say a different story, but obviously everything that's been said in the press and by fans. But we have seen the likes of Zlatan Ibrahimovic say that, you know, he's welcomed him to the club. I mean, what has been the general consensus of Paris fans and players to Di Maria signing?
The players all seem really excited. I mean, he's really good friends with David Luiz from their time at Benfica, obviously Javier Pastore, fellow Argentine teammate. Fans are a bit mixed. I think there's two sets of fans. There's sort of educated ones and the ones who just follow the big stories, the big noise. They're excited by it, but there's some, say, like myself, who look at how PSG play, are thinking, how is this going to work? So I think over his form at Manchester United, I think the jury is definitely still out on what you'll bring and how well you do.
Yeah, definitely. And how do you see Paris moving forward now? Do you think they'll be offloading any players, obviously, with the way that the formation, like you've said there, or do you think, like you say, that it's more a case now if they have these players and they will be sticking together for the rest of the season?
The team they've got, they can possibly let go of people like Ezequiel Lavezzi. There's been talk of Thiago Motta moving on as well, who had a very, very good season, not last season, the season before, and it seemed to catch up with him with his age and sort of the amount of minutes that he put in last season. But they've now got Benjamin Stambouli from Spurs, who is a great replacement. He's more replacing Johan Cabaye's sort of place in that team. If Motta goes, they'll likely bring someone else in. And apart from that, I can't see many big changes, like someone like Cavani. Cavani will be staying. The defence is pretty solid. There won't be lots of ins and outs before the transfer window closes at the start of September.
And the big question is, really, does this help solidify Paris Saint-Germain's fourth successive title?
Yeah, the betting money goes on PSG. You won't get a lot of money back, I doubt, with the really small odds. They are the strongest team in France. They have the best, maybe not the best overall squad in terms of depth, but they have the talent in each position, that there's really no excuse if they don't go on to win that fourth title. It all just depends on how much the Champions League takes out them, whether a team can find the consistency over a whole season to challenge them. And it's more about the strength of the teams below rather than how dominant PSG are. That gap is just too big.
Yeah, definitely. And also one player that made some comments, and I always love watching his press conference, absolutely brilliant, Zlatan Ibrahimovic saying his next club was going to be a big surprise. Now, I could understand if he was just feeding the press a little bit there, but do you think there was anything to make out of those offhand comments that he made?
There was never a dull moment with it. It was Zlatan, isn't it? I mean, there's been speculation there. Milan, their CEO, Adriano Galani, has said that they're in pole position to sign him if he does move. And his contract's up at the end of next summer. And there has been talk of his agent, Mina Raiola, never one short of a quote as well. And he said that Zlatan has worked for so many years, that we've worked for him, now he works for me. So you imagine it's going to be a big money deal somewhere. And I think if PSG could have got money this summer, they may have dipped their toe and just saw what was out there. I think a lot of it's more Zlatan making news, making press. It's definitely going to go in the summer. Personally, I think there might be a move to the MLS on the cards, especially after the way he went down very well at the American tour they've just come back from. He got a lot of attention, a lot of press, and I think he liked that extra level of stardom that the life in America would bring. And I think that, plus a massive contract, would tempt him into moving over there.
Yeah, that one surprised me. And one final question from me is a former Leeds United man has been on the move in Max Gradle, moving from St Etienne to Bournemouth for a much bigger fee than when he moved from Leeds United. Do you think that he'll be missed in the French leagues?
I think for St Etienne, 100%. He scored 17 goals last season, which is a massive return. It was once he came back from the African Cup of Nations, he just hit the ground running and didn't stop. And he was pretty much the reason why they finished as high as they finished fifth. They could have finished in the top three. They were really pushing for that third place. And a lot of it was because of Max Gradle, not just the goals, but his overall performances, his creativity. And Bournemouth is a club he knows well. He knows the English leagues from his time there at Leeds United. And he's really grown as a player since then. And he's not any younger, but I think he is better maturity-wise. I think he's got experience. He's still got that ability to make a difference. I think he's a really good signing for Bournemouth. He's going to be missed at St Etienne. They don't have a lot of goals in them now. They had less, not a lot of goals when he was there. They've even less goals now. So a big loss for them, but a massive gain for Bournemouth.
Well, Andrew, thanks for giving us your insight on the French League. Absolute pleasure as always.
Thanks, Danny. Pleasure.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Now let's talk a little bit more Chelsea. Liam from the Mirror Online still joins me in the studio, but we're going to go over to Gary Hayes, the lead Chelsea correspondent for Bleacher Report, amongst a whole host of other establishments. Gary, thanks for joining us. Can I just get your initial reaction on the John Stones transfer?
Certainly, in the long term, I think if you look at Chelsea, they're on the lookout for a long-term replacement for John Terry, where I think that's where John Stones comes into it. He's a young English defender who's only 21, so you know his talent is with the ball at his feet, and he can put himself about a bit as well. So he sort of fits the bill really for what Chelsea are looking for. I think in the short term, if you saw Rio Ferdinand's comments this week about saying he'd be crazy to go to Chelsea over a club like Manchester United, he's probably correct in that sense, because I don't think Stones is really going to play as much as he would like, or as much as he would if he was at Everton this season, if he does sign for Chelsea. But I think certainly in the long term, this is a move that, for a player who's only 21, it's going to be perfect for him. He's going to be playing at the highest level for one of the best teams in Europe, let alone England, and for his international career as well. In terms of Gary Cahill is that number one defender for England at the moment. So for Roy Hodgson, he's going to be looking at it thinking he's got his future defensive pair in there.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, in a few years' time, that's the sort of pairing we could be seeing. I was going to say, if Stones did move to Chelsea, he's going to have a problem, especially with Kurt Zouma and what a fantastic talent he is. But is the worry that maybe John Terry's getting a bit older now, that next season could be the season where he just maybe drops that pace a little bit, where we don't see him at his peak? Because he has been going for so long, at some point every defender does have a little dip in form.
Yeah, Yeah, certainly. I think that's the concern with Chelsea, you know, why they're looking to a player like Stones. You know, they looked at Varane as well, but realised they couldn't really get him in from Real Madrid. So, you know, Chelsea are playing the long game. I think if you look at a lot of the signings they're making, they aren't short-term signings anymore. And, you know, a player like Stones is going to fit the bill. He's only young. He's going to be able to come in and, you know, Chelsea are looking in the long term for him. He's a player that can be there for 10 years. So, you know, certainly the long-term game is going to work. And with John Terry, you just don't know what you're going to get from him. You know, last season, he was amazing at Chelsea. You know, it was probably his best season in a Chelsea shirt. But how long that goes on for is anyone's guess. You know, I'm not even sure John Terry knows how long he can play on for. But I think bringing someone in like Stones who's talented enough allows Chelsea to manage John Terry's game time a lot more as well, because he played every minute of every Premier League game last season. But whether he'll be able to do that again this year, you know, remains to be seen. And, you know, if Chelsea are getting good enough players to come in like Zouma as well to replace Terry at times, then it's going to allow him to, you know, to play the games that are vital. And, you know, for instance, Capital One Cup games and the early Champions League group stages, he can be left out to rest his body.
And what have you made of Jose Mourinho's transfer policy so far? I mean, he hasn't made too many moves, not compared to last season when he was bringing in the likes of Fabregas, but he does probably have the most solid team in the top four. So do you think he needs to make too many more signings?
Oh, I think Chelsea do, massively. I think they might have the most solid team in terms of the first 11, but I think if you look beyond that, it's a big concern for Chelsea. You know, that attacking midfield area, especially outside of the three who are the preferred choices in terms of Hazard, Oscar and Willian, Chelsea, you know, they haven't really got much in reserve. Juan Cuadrado came in January for Andre Schürrle, and quite what Chelsea are thinking is beyond me, because he's actually weakened that team. I think Schürrle, looking at the game that Chelsea played against Arsenal on Sunday in the Community Shield, that was a game that was crying out for a player like Schürrle to come in, get the ball, get down, be a bit more direct, you know, have a few shots from range and, you know, really test Petr Cech. But Chelsea never really did that. And when Mourinho looked to the bench and he saw Cuadrado, you could see he still doesn't trust him to come in and do a job. So I think certainly that they need at least one more player in that attacking midfield area, because for the first few months in the season, they'll get by. But then, you know, as it hits Christmas and the games are stacking up and, you know, the FA Cup comes into play, and if they're, you know, ambitious enough to get into the latter stage of the Champions League as well, they can't rely on just three players. They need a few more there. And I think certainly, you know, we've spoken about Stones, but in defence as well now, they've lost Felipe Luis at left back, which leaves them with five defenders, you know, and the fifth defender in that being Kurt Zouma. So I think, you know, they do need to add some reinforcements in there.
And what have you made of Chelsea up front? Because obviously, Diego Costa, absolutely fantastic talent in the Premier League, but he's brought in Falcao, and Costa, as we know, he's had his few injuries, and there's always a little bit of doubt over whether or not he'll actually be playing in the first game of the season. So what do you make of the idea of maybe Falcao starting up front by himself? Because I don't think Remy, I don't know about you, is he going to be the kind of player that is able to play the full 90 minutes? He's a great super sub, but are we going to be able to see him sort of pick up where Diego Costa's left off?
I think with Remy, if he gets the games, then, you know, and he has the confidence of the manager, I think he is a player that can come in and do that job for 90 minutes over, you know, a period of time. But it's whether he stays fit. That's the big issue. Because I think if you look at when Costa got suspended in January this year after the Liverpool game in the Capital One Cup, Chelsea played Manchester City a few days later, and Remy played that game, scored for Chelsea, and, you know, he finished 1-1. So he can certainly score important goals. He's a player that can lead the line at times, but the big question is whether Chelsea's three strikers can all be fit. Because, you know, last season we saw with Diego Costa getting injured, and then Remy would come in, he'd score, and then he'd get injured himself, and then, you know, that were left with Drogba, which, you know, for the last five or six games in the season, you know, it was Drogba leading the line for Chelsea, which wasn't ideal considering he's a 37-year-old veteran. So Falcao's challenge is he's got to score more goals than he did at United, and he's got to stay fit. You know, you got four goals last season, which doesn't say much, which doesn't breed too much confidence. And then, you know, his fitness record isn't the best. So at the moment, Chelsea are going into the new season with three strikers who are injury prone, and only one of them is a regular goal scorer. So again, that's another area to be concerned with, because, you know, they are champions, but, you know, whether they can maintain that is another thing, because, you know, I think they've been a bit slow in the transfer market this summer, and a few teams have left them behind.
Yeah, definitely. And what did you make of, obviously, the Community Shield defeat? I mean, John Terry's come out and said that was a bit of a wake-up call for Chelsea ahead of the new season. Do you think that's what Chelsea needed? I mean, what did you make of that game as a whole, really?
I think with the game is that it said more about Chelsea than it did for Arsenal. I think it showed that in terms of their pre-season preparations, Chelsea is still a little bit behind the likes of Arsenal, who came back 2 weeks earlier than Chelsea did. So they've still got a lot of work to do. You know, this week, Mourinho would have been driving them hard on, pushing them hard on the training ground as well with the drills and whatnot. So they've still got a lot of work to do to pick up. And I think they're targeting the Man City game a week on Sunday, which is their second game in the league. I think that's the game where they're really targeting to be, in top condition. I think a Chelsea team 80% can maybe do enough to get a victory against Swansea at the weekend, but that Manchester City game, I don't think they can afford to lose it so early on in the campaign. So I think that's the game they are targeting in terms of being in tip-top shape. But yeah, I think, in terms of that Arsenal game, it just goes back to what I said earlier, regarding the subs bench. The first 11 is there or thereabouts, and it's probably one of the strongest, first 11s in Europe. But when you get beyond that, Chelsea haven't really got much in response. And for a manager such as Mourinho, who's so famed for impacting games when he brings his substitutes on, the way he can change things tactically. I think at the moment he looks through his bench and he doesn't have the answers, and that's the concern for Chelsea. It happened on Sunday where they were 1-0 down at half time and they ended up dominating the game in the second half, but it was almost comfortable for Arsenal because Chelsea couldn't really get at them in the way they wanted to, which goes back to the point of Schürrle. If they had a player like Schürrle there who was able to get the ball and attack and maybe do something different to what Chelsea were doing in the first half, then they would have had a much better outcome. But then again, we say this, and had Ramiro scored his one-on-one header with Cech and Hazard not fired over the bar, we'd be talking about Chelsea victory. So it's fine margins, but at the moment Chelsea have fallen on the wrong side of them.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Gary, thanks a lot for joining me. Absolute pleasure, and I hope to talk to you again very soon.
Okay, cheers.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, here from 9 till 10 tonight. Liam Williams from the Mirror Online still joins us to talk about the latest transfer news. But first, we're going to be talking Leeds United and the fact that they no longer have a left wing problem thanks to this man. Dallas, Liam, Stuart Dallas.
Yeah, well, I know.
You don't look happy at all.
Well, because if I didn't know who Leeds had signed, I would have no idea what you were playing. It's just a random thing. So if you don't know who Leeds have signed, that's going to be totally lost on people.
Yeah, I suppose it's lost on anyone who was born before 1986 when this American TV reality show
came on. I thought it was older than that, to be honest.
No, in 86.
Yeah, but if you were born in 86, you weren't watching Dallas in 86.
No, you weren't watching Dallas. We're getting into the semantics now of who was watching Dallas. That failed. Let's talk about Stuart Dallas and the fact that we no longer have to talk about left wing problems at Leeds United anymore. They've filled that hole now. Uwe Rosa has got to be happy with that, and he's got to be happy for Leeds now to move on and look at this forward attacking play that they're bound to be playing next year, especially with Chris Wood up front.
Yeah, and I think the move was facilitated by losing Steve Morrison as well, because it's a big wage to get off the books and to get rid of him a year early as well. Mm. It's sort of benefited all parties, really. And Leeds can sort of hope to look to push on now.
Yeah, Steve Morrison, like you said there, we'll go into him in a bit more depth later on. But how important is it that Leeds have this pace now? Because I looked at the Everton game and it was an absolute cracker in terms of Chris Wood putting some real pace on against two 19-year-old centre-backs, which, to be fair, they're not Premier League standard. But if you're beating defenders like that on pace when they're 19 years old, then you've got to be doing something right.
Yeah, and you'd hope that it can sort of inspire a really good counter-attacking style of football. If you've got pace down the wings and up front, it'd make for a very exciting Leeds team to watch, you'd think.
Yeah, definitely. And look at Stuart Dallas, that £1.3 million fee which has been reported. Another statement of intent there for Leeds United.
Yeah, and it's something that you feel that they've lacked in recent years. They started with Chris Wood making a big money signing and they've kicked on from that, which is what you want to see, to show that it's not just a flash in the pan and that they are sort of here to stay and kick on properly.
So where do you think this puts Leeds now in the table? They've got to be, I mean, maybe not promotion, maybe not playoffs, but they'll certainly be challenging the top half of the table.
I'd like to see them challenge for the playoffs, to be honest, because you've always got sort of one team around there who you didn't expect to be up there at the start of the season. And if Leeds shake off this tag that they're sort of doomed to failure and get a positive mentality that they believe that they can go up, I don't see why they can't have a good push for the playoffs. Mm. It just takes a good run of results, good runs of form here and there, and all being well, have a decent go at it.
Liam, let's move our attentions to Bradford City. I mean, they've had a pretty interesting time in the transfer market. What are you making of them now going into their first game against Swindon?
I think now, with the signings that they've made, should not be looking to sort of be around the playoff place. I think they have to believe they should be in the playoff places. I think a top six finish now should be expected for them. I think the signings that they've made, the pre-season that they've had and some of the performances that they've put in, I don't see why they can't fill one of those spots. If you look at the three teams who came down, one of them's Blackpool, who I'm certain will not be back up there, which then, if you leave, you know, the other teams back where they were, there's one space free for Bradford.
I mean, it's interesting stuff, because I think a lot of people would expect them to be in and around, especially around six. And I probably say that myself. I can't see them solidly in there, just from some of the other teams around, because I think a lot of teams are going to give this a go. Like, say, Doncaster, they signed Andy Williams from Swindon for a big money fee. He scored a lot of goals last season. You've got Sheffield United, Nigel Atkins. Obviously, he's a League One to Championship specialist, some would say. I think they'll definitely make a good go of it, but I think there's a lot of teams this season in League One that will really want to push out of it. And I think definitely with Sheffield United, I think for me, they're going to be automatics anyway.
I thought that would be the case in recent years with Sheffield United, and they always seem to fall at the final hurdle for some reason. And I don't know why, but you look at like the coupons for the start of the season, and you see that Sheffield United are still in League One. You think, have they still not been promoted yet? It seems overdue.
Yeah.
You'd like to think that it could happen this season, but at the same time, there's nothing to say that they won't do what they've done in the last few years.
Yeah, let's have a look at some of the transfers they've brought in. Tony McMahon from Blackpool, very experienced right back. Matt Marshall's injected some real pace in there. Steve Davis up front, real good replacement for John Stead. They seem to have replaced the likes of Andrew Davis, but also added some great talent as well.
Yeah, I think Paul Anderson as well is a big signing for them to get. And Nathan Clark, actually. Yeah. Proper championship experience. You know, it's I think it'd be invaluable at that level. And also Josh Morris, one of the first signings that they made in the summer, but I saw one of the pre-season games with him. He looked fantastic, to be honest. He was pulling all the strings, a real dead ball specialist. If you can keep some of your key players fit, I'd expect them, not just hope that they do, but I would expect them to be in the top six this season.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Radio Yorkshire will be keeping you updated with all the latest at Bradford City this season. Let's have a look a little bit on Huddersfield Town. Obviously, they've not had the same kind of transfers coming in. I mean, they've had the likes of Dean Whitehead come in on a free transfer. Kyle Dempsey from Carlisle for nearly £300,000. But still, at this stage, Huddersfield, for me, don't look like a team that are going to be making any great strides. I'd have to say, I wouldn't say they'd be struggling next season. Maybe a bit of a consolidation for Chris Powell just to move forward into the season after. Because obviously they don't have the big budgets of some of the other championship clubs.
No, I think Dean Whitehead's a good signing for them. But unlike Leeds, you do wonder. I said earlier that you always seem to get one team or two teams that make a good push unexpectedly. I can't see it being Huddersfield simply because I don't see where it comes from. You know, I don't think they'll be in any trouble. But I do think it will just be a season in mid-table for them, to be honest.
Our man Andy Lawson has been speaking to Doug Thompson, Huddersfield Examiner journalist covering Huddersfield Town, and he's been having a chat with him about some of the latest transfer news.
Yesterday, a rumour starts to go around of Mark Hudson to Brighton. Surely there's not going to be much in this one, Dougie.
No, I mean, that was a very sort of out-of-the-blue rumour, if you excuse the pun, with Brighton playing in blue. But yeah, it's an interesting rumour, but an unexpected one as well, really. Funnily enough, I spoke to Mark Hudson yesterday morning. It was the annual photo call, and I was having a chat with him. And there was absolutely no suggestion from anything he said that he was either unsettled at Town or that any move might be in the offing. So it's very much come out of the blue. People that I've spoken to at the club don't think there's anything in it, but you know, you never say never in football these days, you know, particularly at this time of the season. You know, transfer windows open, season's fast approaching, certain clubs are wanting certain players, or you know, have lists of players that they're looking at. But there's no obvious sort of link up between Mark Hudson and Brighton, you know, either with the club or with the manager there. So, I think it's a case of watch this space. But I would still be surprised if something like that happened. Mark Hudson, obviously the town captain, it would be quite a big thing, you know, to let him go at this stage of the season just before we're starting. So, as things stand, I expect him to be wearing that armband at Hull on Saturday.
Doug Thompson there speaking to our man Andy Lawson earlier on in the week. Liam, one interesting question that no one seems to be able to answer for me, and it's been bugging me for a little bit, and we've only got a little bit of time to talk about it, is why have no big club come in for Charlie Austin when he's going to cost next to nothing for an English player, and also the fact that a lot of teams in the Premier League are lacking up front?
Well, I think part of the problem is that it isn't next to nothing. You're looking at £14-15 million.
That's not a lot of money for an English player, though.
It's an English player who's had one season in the Premier League, and I don't know. Like, with, I know Harry Kane's only really had one good season, but it felt different with Kane to Austin. And I'm not saying that his goals were a fluke, but I think Harry Kane would be much more likely to repeat his goals than Charlie Austin would. And I'm very surprised that he's still at QPR because of all the teams that were interested in him. Newcastle, one of the main ones. But they signed Alexander Mitrovic, so I don't think they'll still be looking for him. West Ham will be another one. The fee does seem to be putting people off, and I'm surprised that Austin's not forced it himself, you know, a little bit. Because you can force a move if you're that desperate.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in the Championship. I think it'd be an okay signing as a backup for some of the top sides.
Yeah.
You know, Man City are looking for homegrown players. Man United are still lacking up front. But I don't know, there's something, it's almost like it's too unfashionable a name, Charlie Austin. Could you really imagine him at a top four club? It just doesn't seem right, you know?
Well, I mean, you could have got, at this rate, I mean, if you were to do this as a bit of a bundle package, you could have had Charlie Austin and Jekyll for less than £30 million, and that would sort you out with your forwards for the entire time. Liverpool spent £32 million on Benteke alone.
Yeah, it's a decent way of looking at it, really.
Mm. Well, that's all we've got time for there on Transfer Tittle Tattle. Liam, thanks, as always, for joining me. Next week, we'll have all the first-round fixtures wrapped up, and I'm looking forward to that, and I'm sure everyone here will be as well.